You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Wednesday, March 29th, and opening day, just days away. Where does the time go? Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting this week on the Blue Jays podcast for Tim McMaster. We're joined, as always, by Jays reporter Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, we thank you, as always, for the time, and I know that maybe Blue Jays fans a bit panicky with the news the other day that Aaron Sanchez had a blister pop up, and I think that blisters rank only behind forearm soreness in terms of red flags for a pitcher. Those are terms you never want to see associated with a pitcher, especially for your favorite team. But it sounds like it's not a big deal. It just kind of cropped up, and they kind of nipped it in the bud. Any reason whatsoever to be concerned about this for Aaron Sanchez?
It shouldn't be. I mean, he went through this last September as well. I mean, Gibbons has kind of talked that, you know, some pitchers, this is what they kind of have to deal with throughout their career. And Sanchez might be one of those pitchers who might be a little bit more susceptible to it. But he dealt with it last September, and it didn't take him long to come back. I think it was about 10 days at that time. They skipped one of his starts. And, you know, that's pretty much the timeline for this one as well. I mean, he was tentatively scheduled to make one more minor league start this weekend before starting the fifth game of the regular season, and that start is in question now, but that's not a big deal. I mean, they can easily skip that outing, and the Jays are kind of already coming up with a plan B where they have Sanchez throw a bit of a longer side early next week after taking a couple more days, and then that would still give him plenty of time to get ready for the April 8th start against Tampa Bay, and kind of in a lot of ways, lends a little bit more credence to the fact that the Blue Jays opening the season with him as the number five starter. I mean, by all accounts, he basically is the ace of this staff, but he got off to a little bit of a delayed start in spring training. They wanted to give him a little bit more time to get ready. He could still use that, but the fact that he has a little bit more rest before the regular season to get rid of this blister thing is the top priority right now. But he should be good to go. I wouldn't be too worried about it if I was a Blue Jays fan or the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and Gregor, it seems like, you know, for all the times that we hear about, you know, this pitcher has this blister, we know that it's a bad thing. But specifically, how does a blister affect a pitcher? Is it just a pain threshold thing where they simply throw the ball and it hurts? Is it as simple as that? Or is it more of a matter of, because they have a blister, they can't get certain grips that they like on certain pitches? Or maybe is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, it really does cause some issues with the grip on certain pitches, particularly I think his curveball is one where it bothers him a little bit more. And so it's just kind of something that he's going to have to work through a little bit. And there's, you know, Gibbons has talked in the past as well. He talked earlier this week about how even when the blister wasn't an issue, Sanchez has kind of had what they would call a bit of a hot spot where they fear that a blister might form a little bit tender, and that's something he's pitched through. So he's pitched through a little bit of minor discomfort on that, but once you actually have a blister pop up, then it becomes a little bit more of a big deal because, you know, that's going to cause a little bit more issues. And so what they just did is they just went ahead and drained that area, and he's going to, you know, soak and receive some treatment on that this week. But I don't think it should be a big deal. I mean, the problem is, as I guess we have seen pitchers from time to time where this can become an ongoing problem. I think back to Rich Hill, I believe, last year was a guy who missed quite a bit of time with that because it didn't go away. And so, you know, there's always going to be that in the back of your mind. But I think the fact that Sanchez has been through this before at least does help and give a little bit more confidence that this should be a very short-term thing. And you know, Gibbons said earlier today he has no doubt he'll be ready to go for that fifth start.
Yeah, as long as, you know, like you said, not a recurring thing, just something that he deals with every now and then, and everything should be A-OK. Gregor, transitioning from that to Josh Donaldson, the former MVP. It seems like he is finally kind of rounding into form after that calf injury really slowed him down in the early onset of spring training on Tuesday. He got his first hits of the entire spring, including his first home run. So, Gregor, when you look at, you know, the Blue Jays take the field on Monday, just days away for opening day, what kind of Josh Donaldson are we going to see that day? In other words, is it going to take him a couple of weeks to get to getting back to being the player that everyone knows he can be? Or is it a fact, or is it a matter where, you know what, he just might need a couple days to be the MVP caliber type player that we're used to seeing?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take him too long. I wouldn't be surprised if it does take him a couple of games. But, you know, I think he came back at just the right time. You know, he was able to get into some minor league games before he returned to the big league side earlier this week. And You know, so he's been able to get that. And I think the big thing for him is what he said was it's more about tracking pitches. And so, you know, the first few games, he didn't have any hits, but he had several walks, which shows that the plate discipline's there and that he's picking the ball up pretty well out of the pitcher's hand. And so that was encouraging. And then I think the big encouraging thing was in that game against Philadelphia, you know, he took a couple of pitches on the outer half of the plate, and one he sent a booming shot over, no doubter, over the wall in right center field. That was one of the longer home runs I've seen him hit. And then there was another one to straightaway center that was also out in the outer half of the plate. And the fact that he was able to go up the middle and to the right center field with that kind of does show his timings there a little bit, not trying to pull everything. And Josh Donaldson's really at his best when he's using the whole field. He's not your prototypical pull-only guy. And so when he's starting to do those type of things, those are usually signs that he's kind of rounding into form. And so it's one thing to do that in spring training, late in camp, against lower-level pitching. It's another thing to do it in the regular season, but I don't think it'll take him too long.
Yeah, a healthy JD is a good thing for the Blue Jays and a very bad thing for the rest of the American League and the AL East in particular. And, Gregor, in addition to Josh Donaldson, we've also seen Troy Tulowitzki and Russell Martin also go deep for the first time in recent games. And I know that, you know, veteran players generally don't give a you-know-what about spring training numbers because they're veterans and because they have a track record and they've been through this before. But at the same time, I got to think that at this stage of the spring, as April is creeping closer and closer, that to see these guys, even though they are proven veterans, have finally put one over the fence, there had to be more than a few sighs of relief. Do you agree?
I think so. And they don't really admit it. They'll say that they don't really care. And, you know, Donaldson was one joking after that two-hit game that, you know, he couldn't care less if he finished the entire spring without a hit. And he was asked, when did that attitude kind of start? And he was like, well, when I started to realize that I no longer had to compete for a job on a major league roster dating back to those days in Oakland. And it's true. I mean, there is far less concern when you're a veteran guy with a secure job. But at the same time, you want to see some hits fall, and you don't want your first hits to be at the beginning of the regular season. And if you're guys who need to show a little bit of power, like Donaldson, like Tulowitzki, and like Martin all do, you want to see some of those positive results before the end of spring training. It's not the end-all, be-all, but it's certainly a good way to end this. And for a spring training that's been a little bit weird for the Blue Jays, because there's been a lot of guys who got off to delayed starts or had a bit of a slow start at the plate in terms of results, things do seem to be kind of rounding into form at the right time. I mean, you want guys peaking in the final week of spring training, and it does seem that is the direction that this team is going right now.
Yeah, things are trending up as we see Donaldson, Tulo, and Russell Martin all muscling up here in recent days, and hopefully that has a carryover effect into the regular season and beyond. Of course, Gregor, a few topics to pick your brain about before we wrap up here. Every camp for every team, we see a bunch of minor league guys. We see, you know, the top prospects that most fans know about. We also see some lower level guys, some younger guys that maybe aren't quite on the radar. So from that group, give me one guy that's really turned some heads and surprised some people this spring.
Yeah, there's a couple. I mean, one is a little bit more the prominent prospect guys, and his first baseman, Rowdy Tellez, who came on strong at the beginning of camp and is really starting to make a name for himself around these parts. And he's not going to begin the year with the team, obviously. He's going down to AAA Buffalo. But you never know. In the second half of the season, I think ideally the team would keep him in the minor leagues for a full year. But you never know with the situation at first base. The Jays don't exactly have a ton of proven options over there. There's some question marks about Justin Smoak, and there's some question marks about exactly where the Jays are going to use Steve Pierce. So there's an outside chance that Tellez could contribute in the second half of the season. But if not, then his future still looks bright for 2018 and beyond. And the other guy who's completely came from off the radar really was Meza, who's a left-handed pitcher who wasn't on the 40-man coming into camp and was kind of a bit of an unknown, but he came in and really impressed. Mark Spiro, the Blue Jays president, had plenty of praise for him a couple weeks ago and identified him as kind of the biggest surprise in camp. And he didn't make the team either, but for a team that also has some question marks in the bullpen, particularly from the left side with J.P. Howell and Aaron Loop, Those two, are, you know, it's probably unrealistic to think that they're going to both stay healthy and perform the entire season. So there's going to be a need for that lefty in the minor leagues to come up at some point in time. And Kim Mays is a guy who's kind of put himself on the radar.
And, Gregor, to come down the home stretch here, it seems like, you know, every spring training, based on feedback you get in your inbox and on, you know, Twitter and other forms of social media, there's always one guy, maybe more than one, that fans freak out about or panic about because they're not having a great spring. It's always kind of funny to watch, and then the season begins and they're fine. But it's kind of a rite of spring training, I guess. Who would be that one guy for the Blue Jays right now that you're sensing fans are maybe irrationally concerned about?
It would be Aaron Sanchez, and it's not just related to the Blue Jays. That certainly caused a little bit more concern over the last few days, but even before that, there were some concerns about his numbers from the fan base, and you know, he's a guy who actually this spring had more earned runs than innings pitched, and so those type of numbers certainly jump off the page. But you know, Aaron Sanchez is going to be fine. I mean, early on in particular, he was working on some things like a lot of pitchers who aren't competing for jobs, and this is the first time that Aaron Sanchez has come into spring training not having to compete for a job, and he really spent a lot of time working on that changeup, throwing it in counts that he normally wouldn't, and so it got hit hard at certain times, but that's not a big deal. I mean, Aaron Sanchez is there's no reason to believe that he's not going to be able to pick up where he did last year as long as that blister issue is taken care of. And, you know, I think we'll look back at you know, an ERA in the tens in spring training and maybe even laugh in a couple months at a little bit of the concern that was around him, because I think everything's going to be fine with Aaron Sanchez.
Yeah, that'll be easily and quickly dismissed, and I think fans have to remember that sometimes, you know, a pitching coach tells a guy, all right, get out there and throw your weakest pitch, throw it 50 times. You know, that's all they throw, because yeah, they want to improve. They don't want that to be their weakest pitch. They're working on their entire repertoire, but on that particular day, they work on just one pitch. The numbers don't matter. Everything will be A-OK. Gregor Chisholm, thanks so much for the time. And right now, we're going to wrap this up a bit differently than in weeks past, as you, Gregor, had the chance to sit down recently with John Gibbons, as you and he talked about what's in store for the upcoming Blue Jays 2017 season. Let's hear that interview right now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dunedin, where we're joined with John Gibbons, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, as we look ahead to the 2017 season. And John, you're returning. A few changes were made this offseason, but for the most part, you've got the vast majority of your core from a team that went back-to-back in the American League Championship Series last year. What are your expectations for this team heading into the season?
Well, Gregor, you know what? I mean, we got a good team. And like you said, the majority of the guys, you know, I mean, it's a good core group, you know, very good group, you know, and they've been very successful the last couple of years. So our expectations are high, you know. I mean, things have really turned over here the last few years, and we go into every season, you know, looking to win something. And, you know, we've come close the last couple of years. We want to take that extra step, get to the World Series. So that's our goal. But, you know, a couple new faces out there, but overall it's still a really solid core group of guys that have been here.
One of the big additions this offseason was Carlos Morales. It's easier said than done to replace a guy like Edwin Encarnacion, but
right,
he's a veteran guy. He gives your lineup a bit of a different look. How do you think he fits in with this squad?
Heck, I think he's going to play a big part of this, and he fit in from day one. And, you know, I saw enough of Kendry, you know, in his days in Kansas City, and of course in Seattle, a little bit in Anaheim, to be a big fan anyway. And, you know, he's always been one of the top hitters in the game. You know, he's not just a slugger. He's a pretty damn good hitter himself. So, you know, he's going to fit nicely in the middle of our lineup. You know, and he gives us that left-handed look, something that we've been missing a little bit. So, you know, I expect him to have a big year. You put him in our division. I mean, they're all great hitting ball parks. You know, in the past few years, he's been playing in some, you know, the toughest places to hit as far as, you know, big ballparks and out in Seattle and then, of course, Kansas City. So I think he'll definitely take advantage of that. He's a good one. And you know what? I talk to people in Kansas City, say you're not going to find a better guy, a better teammate, a better competitor. I could see all that after the first week down here.
In the bullpen, another area where there is some changes this offseason, we know Roberto Osuna is the closer, and then you've got Jason Grilli, new guys like Joe Smith and J.P. Howell mixed in with Joe Biagini. How do you anticipate to handle the eighth inning? Are you going to kind of mix and match, or would you like to eventually settle on one guy to typically get that?
Well, I mean we'll see how all that evolves. You know, I like the two new additions, Smitty. You know, Smitty's always been tough on righties, and he's got that different look down there. You know, JP is going to fill our left-handed role, but he can also get some right-handers. And we'll just kind of see how all that plays out. And you know, usually what happens, I mean, really, it happened. It's been happening here the last few years. You know, you kind of go into the season with an idea what you may want, but things change. You know, and you know, guys find their different positions and things like that. So I mean, this year may be the same way. So, but I like the new look, you know. And a couple, there's something about having good veterans down there too, you know, like with Al and Smitty, and they've been through it a lot. They know how to survive. You know, they know how to handle the grind of a long season. You know, and really what we're doing now is really trying to decide on two spots, who's going to fill those remaining two spots. But I like the look of it.
Last question for you. Francisco Liriano's been one of the big storylines down here, just how good he has looked this spring. You obviously saw him in the second half of last year and what he was able to do, but what do you think he can do for this team over the course of a full season now that you've seen him in the spring as well?
Greg, he's been tremendous. You know, I mean, really from, you know, day one he got here last year, Larry's done a great job for us. And, you know, I guess the word out when he was there in Pittsburgh, you know, his command would kind of desert him a little bit. We didn't see any of that. But, you know, I mean, that's his style of pitching. I mean, he's going to go through stretches where that might happen. But, you know, he can be as dominant as anybody we have or anybody in baseball when he's on. You know, I mean, he's got a dynamite moving fastball. You know, he's got a great slider. You know, I saw Larry when he first broke in with Minnesota when I was over there coaching Kansas City, you know. So, I mean, he can dominate a game with the best of them. And he, like I said, he's a great competitor. And, you know, I would really expect him to have a huge year, you know. I mean, because he can go out there on any night and shut down the best hitters.
It is Monday, March 27th, and we are 6 days away from opening nights 2017. Hard to believe, and 1 week away from the traditional opening day for a brand new baseball season. Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting for Tim McMaster this week. We're on the phone with Brittany Giroli, our Orioles reporter. And Brittany, as always, thank you for the time. The Birds and the Red Sox just wrapped up a spring training affair down in Florida. Not a lot of pitching in that game on either side, but Tyler Wilson, for his part, did do some pitching, and he pitched very well. Four innings of just a one-run ball against that very deep Red Sox lineup. I know that he's vying for a rotation spot for this Orioles team, so how much further did he increase his chances with a rather a strong showing today?
Yeah, he definitely increased them, and, you know, the win was a factor today, like it is a lot in spring training games. But interestingly enough, before the game, Orioles manager Buck Showalter kind of noted that right now they're considering Wilson more in that long relief spot, which is yet to be determined, of course, of who gets that spot before they break camp. So Wilson did a good job. He was very trustworthy, as Buck likes to say. He was able to limit the damage to only one solo homer, was able to give them what they needed. And this was a Red Sox lineup that had a decent amount of regulars. They play on the road again tomorrow night. So there were certainly some recognizable names, Dustin Pedroia, Mitch Moreland, Sandy Leone, some guys that you had heard of, which was usually, you know, a change from some of these road contests for these teams. So it was a good lineup, a good look for Tyler Wilson, and he did a nice job. He was very impressive and kept his composure.
And I think what makes his outing even more impressive is the fact that as soon as he left the game, all the Red Sox did was score 9 runs in the fifth inning against an overmatched Orioles bullpen today. So kind of by default, Wilson's numbers look even better in light of what the Red Sox did in that monster fifth inning. One guy, Brittany, that we know is going to be part of the rotation in the early part of the season and far beyond is Kevin Gausman, because he got the call earlier today that he will be on the mound for opening day. As, you know, not too much of a shock here, I don't think, considering the injury to Chris Tillman. But nonetheless, when Kevin Gausman got that news, it's a big deal for any pitcher, whether you see it coming a mile away or not. What was his reaction to getting that news from Buck Showalter?
Yeah, he had kind of looked at it a little bit, he said. And, you know, Buck asked him, I think, 2 days ago when he found out. And Buck wanted to know if it was the shock. And Gausman's like, well, no, you know, I kind of line up for that day. So he was joking around. He's like, even I'm not that bad at math. So it wasn't a huge shock to Gausman or to anyone, as you mentioned. But a really cool honor for a guy who spent last year on the disabled list to start the season. So a really strong season from Gausman when you look at what he was able to do when he came back from the DL, especially the final 2 months of the season. He has shown no signs of slowing down. He's been fantastic all spring, really gotten into a rhythm. He's starting to mature. You know, he's hitting that age now where he's been in the majors for a few years. He's figured out who he is. And as you mentioned, the Orioles really are expecting a lot out of him, not just this year, but for the next couple of years to come.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of these guys that you look at him on the mound and the talent and the ability and the raw stuff, it's all there. Nobody denies that, but the results have been rather inconsistent. So Brittany, when you've looked at him this spring, you know, as compared to his first couple years in the majors, is there something that is noticeably different? Is there, you know, increased fastball velocity, better command? You know, what is it that's kind of enabled him, at least so far, to turn the corner?
No, there's nothing really all that tangible other than, I think, probably between his ears. You know, he kind of knows now that he doesn't need to come out and throw 97, 98 with every pitch. He's become more of a pitcher and less of a thrower, and you hear guys talk about that a lot. But he knows how long the season is. He knows how to prepare. And it really was a testament to him last year that he was so good down the stretch when they needed it so badly. So I don't think it's anything other than just that maturity process. He's kind of growing into who he is. And he said today, I have a lot to be thankful for in my life. So I think he's kind of a guy who just is at a really good spot right now, and he just seems to get it.
And Orioles fans are hoping that translates to increased production on the mound, as he will be the man on the mound for opening day for the Birds. And quickly, Brittany, any health update whatsoever with Chris Tillman? Has he, you know, in terms of a throwing program, or what's going on with him right now?
He played catch yesterday. He said it went okay. He'll play catch again tomorrow. So nothing really. They're kind of small incremental updates here. It's good news that he is throwing, but we're still a ways away from having any kind of concrete timeline or anything like that.
Yeah, at least no setbacks, which in this case, no news is good news there. So good stuff there in terms of the Orioles rotation. We'll see how it all comes together with about a week to go before opening day. And Brittany, want to transition a little bit. I want to, you know, as again, spring training is winding down, want to get some spring training superlatives, if you will, to steal a Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show skit. But, you know, some things going on during camp, and one thing that always kind of fascinates me is that it seems like every year, whether it's, you know, two young guys or two, you know, veteran guys, there always seems to be what you would call a bromance that blossoms during spring training. Anything along those lines with Orioles camp this year between two guys that kind of seem like they're joined at the hip the last few weeks?
Well, I don't know about the last few weeks, but the last few years, Manny Machado and Jonathan Scope have a very well-documented bromance. They've got some weird handshakes. They're always teasing each other, always hanging out together. They came up through the minor leagues together. So I don't think there's a chance, Matt, that some bromance forms that comes even close to the one that those two have going on.
That's, I have heard that from other people that follow the team, that or cover the team even too, that those two are definitely, you know, two peas in a pod. So it's good to see that bromance is only getting deeper and deeper in Orioles camp between those two. Brittany, how about a minor league guy that, whether it's a top prospect or maybe a guy that isn't on people's radars just yet, a guy that's really turned heads in spring training with what he's done? Anybody on that front?
There's been a couple, but I think I'm going to go with Trey Mancini. 3-for-3 again today. Been a guy who really jumped on their radar, came up for about a week in September towards the end, just because they felt like there was maybe a need, and clobbered left-handed pitching. And so you weren't sure what you were going to get here this spring. And he's played like a guy who's, you know, hair's on fire. I mean, he's really gone out there and done everything he can, and he's kind of put himself in this competition now. Now he's in a spot where the Orioles are going to have a hard time with him not making the team. So he's been a really good story. He's been really fun to watch. Also, their top prospect right now, catcher Chance Cisco, just got reassigned today. He was in camp much longer than people anticipated as well. I think he turned heads a little bit. He was on their radar to begin with. Both of these guys were. But there's something to be said for going out and proving it and continuing to elevate yourself. And that's what both of these guys have done this spring.
Yeah, every time I looked up at the TV today during the Orioles-Red Sox telecast, Mancini was on the bases. The guy was all over the place today. He's had a terrific spring. And hopefully that carries over into the 2017 regular season. Brittany, as you're down there with the team during camp, I know that, you know, it's around this time of year, if not sooner, that guys complain that, you know, it's getting monotonous, it's getting a little boring, we want these games to count, and they're not going to for another week or two. And I know that teams, you know, they will do something, you know, kind of silly or wacky or different to break up that monotony. So along those lines, what have the Orioles done to kind of inject some fun and some enthusiasm into spring training?
Well, they always do. They do a couple things. They always do a movie night the night before spring training starts, like an inspirational type of movie night, and then they have a talent show that they do. Guys have different talents that they put on in the clubhouse. We are not privy to the talent show, but it's always a hit. Guys get pretty into it, and I think it's a good, you know, team bonding kind of experience.
Do guys, you know, I know with social media being what it is right now, does anything end up on Twitter or Instagram from these talent shows, or are phones banned
from
these?
No. They're not a big social media team. Adam Jones is probably their biggest guy on there. And no, nothing has leaked out. You know, we've heard about players doing impressions of Buck Showalter or Dan Duquette and, you know, guys doing songs, but no one has ever seen anything.
I hope one day we get to go behind the curtain, so to speak, and see what these guys do, because I think there'll be some very entertaining skits that go on. But certainly good to hear that they're having fun down there in Orioles camp. Brittany, coming down the home stretch here, it seems like, you know, every year with fan bases being what they are, and again with social media being what it is, that there's always one guy, maybe more than one guy, that fans get irrationally concerned about because they're not having a great spring, even though we know inherently how ridiculous that is because spring training really doesn't matter in the end. But nonetheless, based on what you've seen in terms of fan feedback, who is one guy that Orioles fans are kind of freaking out about right now because they're not having that great of a spring?
Probably Mark Trumbo. No home runs, so he did have a really good game today, which I think maybe set some people, maybe made him a little calmer, put the pitchforks down a little bit. But, you know, look at his lines. They haven't been too impressive. But like you said, it really doesn't matter at all at this juncture. You look at what he was able to do last year, and you know that he's going to put up numbers. He's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So that's a guy who I think early on people have expressed concern over, and he's a guy who there really is zero concern in the organization about how he's doing this spring.
Yeah, nor should there be. The guy has a track record. He's a veteran. You know he'll be A-OK, but it's always fun to see fans, you know, freak out a little bit about a guy that you know is going to knock 35 out of the ballpark, at least for the upcoming season. So no concerns there. And, Brittany, in terms of a guy that's a newcomer to the Orioles in 2017, one that you've particularly liked interacting with the most in terms of, you know, just talking with, interviewing, who might that one guy be?
There's been a couple that we've enjoyed so far. Chris Johnson, Ron Johnson's son, has been really cool. It's been cool to see kind of that father-son dynamic a little bit. Craig Gentry is another one who I think actually might end up making the team, but he's a guy who's fit in very well. I know he was teasing Chris Davis about they're going to Orlando tomorrow, and, of course, the veterans don't go. And Buck and Gentry had a little scheme going where they put Davis's name on that travel roster. And Gentry's like, I'll drive. Do you want to drive or do you want to carpool? And, so, you know, he's been a real good fit right away for a new guy coming in here. And, again, he's having a fantastic spring. So he could very easily end up making this club, too, which would be a really good story.
Yeah, it'd be a very pleasant surprise. And we'll see what happens as the days are dwindling until opening night / opening day for a brand new baseball season, as hard as that is to believe. Brittany, great stuff as always. We're going to wrap things up a bit differently this week as you recently had the chance to sit down with Buck Showalter and discuss what is on the docket for the 2017 O's for the upcoming season.
Buck, as you guys wrap up a very long spring training, I think one of the longest in history
ever.
Are you glad, minus the Chris Tillman injury, obviously, that this team, that everyone health-wise is just... Is that the biggest priority, I guess, at this point in time, just to get everybody healthy and get them up to Baltimore?
Yeah, we got a week left, so I don't want to jinx us at all. That's the one thing that everybody just wants to get out of here healthy and be as good as you're capable of being. You know, Chris is not if, it's when, and we'll get him back. But everybody's going to face those challenges. But, you know, we're playing 38 games this spring training. That's, do the math, that's 200. That's a lot of baseball, but, you know, it's we're in that type of spring right now. Everybody's just ready to get on with the season, and there's some things we need to finish off, and some little nagging things, you know, where Seth Smith's concerned, where Miley's concerned, guys getting back in the WBC, trying to get your arms around them about what their needs are to get ready, because, you know, that bell's going to ring in April regardless of whether you're ready or not.
When you look at guys like Gausman and Bundy and some of these younger pitchers, is it kind of cool to see them evolve each spring and kind of, you know, come into their own, I guess, a little bit more?
They're at the part of the process that you want them to be at. You know, all the things that young pitchers have to go through, the learning curve and the growing pains, they've kind of been through all that. And, you know, they're primed to really be as good as they're capable of being. And I'm curious, like everybody is, to see how good that is. But they've got a lot of things that you can assume now that they've been exposed to, and you know, we're going to need them. We're going to need them, and it's really exciting for us to have, you know, some good young pitchers that are going to be with us for a while that have a chance to go to another level.
I know you didn't like the guys leaving for the World Baseball Classic for a long time.
I didn't like it selfishly.
Yeah. But was it nice to see guys like Adam and Manny and just kind of get all this national attention? I mean, you see how good they are every day, and you're kind of spoiled by that. But to have, you know, as much international fame as the two of them did in that kind of a tournament.
Oh, yeah, I understand what our job descriptions are here is to get our Major League club ready to play and represent Baltimore. But it was a great event. And I think a lot of people, nothing Adam did or any of those guys did, Manny, and all of them surprised any of us. And you got to see it too. And it was just good that they were on a global stage and everybody in the world got to see what we get to see. And it's a reminder of how lucky we are to have them. It's fun to watch. It cost me a lot of sleep staying up late at night. I wish they would have had it on the same time zone as Florida Gulf. But they didn't ask us, but it was fun. And we can take that old man nap on the way over to a game the next day and catch up.
And finally, Buck, when you look at this lineup, it's pretty much the same as it was a year ago, give or take a few guys. It was such a strength power-wise last year. I mean, you look at this lineup, you have to be pretty excited, I guess, going into the season, looking at what these guys can do, and then having a guy like Chris Davis, who wasn't right for all of last year, finally healthy and in that mix as well.
Well, we're primed. You know, we're sitting laying in the weeds like we always do, and we like when people don't get, you know, the things that you can't quantify, our guys are real good at, and we like that. But, you know, I think we're going to be a little better defensively. You know, our bullpen, I think with the Donnie Hart over long haul, could be better. I think that our depth is in a lot better place than its usable depth because we have optional players and guys that you know, we can move back and forth without losing them. You know, and things change. We lost Matt Weider. That was tough. We were able to get Pedro back in the fold. I'm not sure how it's all going to fit, but I like the depth part of it. We're doing everything to hold on to it. We'll have some really good what-ifs this year if we can hold the fort down and start pitching.
Awesome. Thanks, Buck.
It is Tuesday, March 28th, and opening day is less than 1 week away. Can you believe it? Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting today on the Yankee podcast for Tim McMaster, as we're joined, as always, by Yankee reporter Brian Hoke. And, Brian, some things to touch on today as the opening day roster for the Bombers begins to take shape. And one of the more intriguing battles in camp has been for the final two rotation spots behind Tanaka, CeCe, and Michael Pineda. It seemed like Adam Warren really had an inside track on one of those two spots behind those three. A rough outing the other day, how much did that hurt his chances? Do you still see him in this bullpen the rotation at the onset of the season?
No, actually, Joe Girardi has said that Warren will begin the year in the bullpen, so... clearly that rough outing did not help him, but I think what worked against Warren more was the fact that he's been good in both roles. They know they can count on him out of the bullpen. The way their rotation shakes out, they actually don't need a fifth starter until April 16. So they're going to carry eight relievers to begin the year. So Warren gives them some stability there. He can give you distance. Obviously, he's built up as a starter. I think that Warren, obviously disappointed. He wants to be a starter, but he's taken the attitude that he'll do whatever it is to help the team win. He's just happy to be back with the Yankees after spending a couple months with the Cubs. Obviously got a World Series ring out of it. Hopes to get his Yankees ring, too. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, Adam Warren is going to be in the bullpen to start the year.
And, Brian, was that a make-or-break outing for him? In other words, like, if he'd pitched well, are we talking about him as a starter right now?
I'm not sure we would be. I think that Jordan Montgomery has come out of nowhere and really opened some eyes in this camp. And obviously there's a reason he's still around on March 28th. They're going to give him one more start. This is a kid who pitched really well last year in the minors. He's jumped on the radar. And a couple guys have not stepped up and grabbed opportunities. Luis Sessa obviously is out of the mix already. Chad Green's pitched all right. Luis Severino's been up and down. His last outing was pretty good. Brian Mitchell has been a little up and down. He was better early. And so I think that you put all that together, and there's opportunity there. I think that they have not made any final decisions yet. I think that this is going to come down to the wire, and they may very well have not decided anything until a few hours before they get on that plane for Atlanta.
And, Brian, of course, somebody is going to be the number four starter. Somebody is going to be the number five starter. I'm going to put you on the spot. As of right now, who do you think it's going to be for both spots?
Well, I've gone on record as saying that I thought it was going to be Brian Mitchell and Jordan Montgomery, but I'm not sure if the wind is blowing that way anymore. So I did write that, and I'm going to stick to that. But I think that Severino's still the dark horse. They've given him every opportunity to grab a rotation spot. They really want him to be a starter. They saw what he did at the end of 2015. Pitched very well. Obviously did not see that as a starter last year. They want to see it. So I think Severino's going to get every chance. And so I wouldn't be completely shocked to see him take the number four spot, but I think that he didn't pitch quite as well as they would have hoped. But maybe if he finishes strong here, maybe they can change their minds and really get them leaning that way.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting few days here of camp for the Yankees to determine those number four and number five spots in that rotation. And, Brian, it seems like today, or I don't know if it happened actually today or recently, but it was a good day or series of days for Ronald Torres as he projects to be the starting shortstop, correct?
Yeah, it's a good day for Ronald Torres, bad day for Didi Gregorius and the Yankees, obviously, because they were counting on having him at short, but that's obviously not going to be the case. So Girardi has indicated that he is leaning that way, and he's got a lineup out tonight against the Tigers that could be very representative of the opening day lineup, and he's got Torres at short. So I thought that Tyler Wade was in the mix. They still haven't ruled out the fact that he could make the team, but I do believe Ronald Torres will be there on April 2nd against the Rays at Tropicana Field.
Yeah, how disappointing is it with Gregorius? Because, you know, if memory serves, he had a very good second half of 2016. Seemed like he had that position, you know, locked and loaded. What are the thoughts on him right now?
Absolutely. And you're talking about a guy who has really come into his own. You know, remember when the Yankees got him, he was taking over for Derek Jeter. There were questions if he could even hit left-handed pitching. He's answered all those questions. He hit over 330, I believe, against left-handers last year, has really made strides on both sides of the ball. And Girardi said nobody is better in the game at relay throws than Didi Gregorius. So clearly they'll be missing him. They think they're going to get him back in early May, and that will obviously be a bonus. But for the meantime, they're going to try and patch from within, probably with Ronald Torres.
Yeah, I guess it's a good, not a good situation to have a guy hurt, but to have a guy that can aptly fill in. And Ronald Torres, certainly a boon for the Yankees as they kick off the 2017 season. And, Brian, you mentioned that the lineup that's being put out tonight for their game is going to be representative of what we could see on a regular basis in the regular season. Now, of course, Torres at shortstop and also batting fifth in that game is somebody that Yankee fans are not going to be used to seeing, correct?
Oh, yeah, Jacoby Ellsbury in the lineup. And, you know, Girardi has hinted about the idea of breaking up the lefties at the top of the order. He really he thought about that last year, made his opinion known. They want to take a look at it and see how it is. So what he's got at the top of the lineup here, it goes lefty, right, left, right, left. And he's got Brett Gardner leading off, and then Gary Sanchez hitting second, Greg Bird third, Matt Holliday four, and then Ellsbury five. And obviously Ellsbury is a few years removed from that year in Boston where he hit 30 home runs, but they say they're not looking for him to change his approach. I think that this is something the Yankees really are interested in doing. They just want him to be the same guy he's been. Obviously, they would like a better version than they got last year, but Girardi said today it's almost like you got a second leadoff hitter right in the middle of the order, and obviously it breaks up those lefties. So it's something they're going to think about for sure. It's something they've been talking about all spring, and now you're going to get a few games to see how it works.
And we've seen so many times that guys, you know, all it takes is a change of scenery within the lineup. You know, he's been batting first, batting second for pretty much the entirety of his career. Now he bats fifth. It's a different look. And maybe it pays dividends for Jacoby Ellsbury as the Yankees finally want to get a return on that huge contract they gave him a couple of years ago. Brian, as we come down the home stretch here, a couple of spring training superlatives, if you will, to throw at you. One thing I love asking all the beat reporters is that every spring, for every club, it seems like two guys strike up a deep friendship or a bond or, if you will, a bromance. So is there a bromance going on right now within Yankee spring training?
Oh, off the top of my head, I would say that Aaron Hicks and Aaron Judge have not looked like two guys who are fighting for a opening day roster spot. I see those guys hanging out and joking a lot, so I think this competition might have actually brought them closer together. And I should say that the Yankees haven't decided yet. Hicks is in that lineup tonight, but that doesn't necessarily mean Judge isn't going to be the opening day right fielder. But either way, I think that those two guys have grown closer as spring training goes on. And so that, yeah, I'll go with Judge and Hicks.
Yeah, maybe it's a bonding over having the same first name. Stranger things have happened. So that's a good way to look at it there. I know that Gleyber Torres has just torn the cover off the ball all spring. But when you look at the entirety of the minor league component of the Yankee spring training right now, give me one guy that's most improved his stock, maybe a guy that wasn't on the radar when spring training began, but certainly is right now.
Well, I'd love to go with Torres for you because I think he's been the most outstanding Yankee in camp, certainly the outstanding young player in camp. But I'll throw a couple others at you. Jordan Montgomery, who I talked about, the big, tall left-hander. He's a downhill plane. Obviously pitched well last year, especially when he got called up to AAA. And the fact that he's hung around this long, the Yankees have really taken notice of him. And I think he's going to be at Yankee Stadium. If it's not in April, it'll be at some point this year. He'll probably be starting for the Yankees. So I think that Montgomery coming out of nowhere, beating out those five guys for attention and really stepping up and making them say, hey, take a look at me. I'm going to go Jordan Montgomery for that.
Okay, and Brian, how about, you know, every year during spring training, you know, we see guys that that perform very well and other guys that don't, you know, perform up to their standards. But again, it's spring training. It doesn't matter. You take it all with a grain of salt. Nonetheless, judging from feedback in your inbox and on social media, who is one guy that Yankee fans are freaking out about right now for no reason?
I would say probably Chase Headley. I feel like a lot of Yankee fans keep asking about, could Tyler Wade come in and take over third base? Could Ronald Torres do it? Could it, you know, when is Miguel Andujar going to be ready to take over third base? I think that Yankee fans, they've seen enough of Chase Headley at this point that they think something better could be out there. I think the problem for the Yanks is he's still under contract for two more years. So I don't sense that they're going to make any moves there. He obviously was terrible in April. He admitted that openly, but from his birthday on, which is the first week of May on, he was actually a pretty good player for them last year. Certainly not in the upper half of Major League third baseman, but he's motivated to come back and have a better year. And so I think that the Yankee fans are maybe a little too concerned about Chase Headley. I think that they can win games with Headley at the hot corner.
Yeah, I mean, the track record's there. He'll be A-OK. I don't think there's anything to worry about with the veteran Chase Headley. Brian, great stuff as always. And this week, as opposed to previous weeks, we're going to end things a little bit differently as you recently had the chance to sit down with Joe Girardi as you discuss what's in store for the Yankees in 2017 with the Yankee skipper.
Joe, there's a lot of talk about the youth and energy of this camp coming in. Just what have your impressions been of the way things have gone?
There's a lot of youth and there's a lot of energy. So it's been really good. And it's been a wide variety of young players that have added to our veterans. And we've played extremely well in spring training. And you want to see the carryover in the season.
You've already made one decision. You named Greg Bird your opening day first baseman. Where do things stand as far as filling out the back end of the rotation?
Well, that's still something that we have a lot to iron out. It's been tough. There's been some ups and downs in the start, so the decisions have, you know, they haven't been real clear cut. So we got about eight more days to figure this out. We're going to have a lot of meetings.
You weren't planning on having to pick out a shortstop. How do you break down the pros and cons of the guys you do have in camp right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at Torres, and he did a really good job playing everywhere for us last year, second, short, or third. You look at a young man like Tyler Wade, is it a guy, do we feel, is he ready to step in? You have Cosman camp, you have Solano and Tejada. So that's a decision we didn't expect to have to make, but we're going to because we're going to be without DD for a while. So they're all going to get a look over the next 8 days, and we'll make a decision.
You've kind of indicated that right field's a little too close to call right now between Judge and Hicks. What do you think will make the difference for you?
Probably these last 7 or 8 days, and it could change. You know, and it is a situation that you take both. Yeah, I guess there is a situation where you could take both and try to get playing time for everyone involved. But these last 7 or 8 days, we're going to see better pitching. They're going to see guys 2 and 3, you know, at bats. They're going to see a starter for 2 and 3 matches. How do they make the adjustments? And then we'll go from there.
It is Tuesday, March 28th. Opening day is less than 1 week away. Where does the time go? Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting this week for Tim McMaster on the Rays podcast. We're joined, as always, by Bill Chastain, our Rays reporter. And, Bill, some good timing to have this podcast right now because hours ago, the Rays made a trade. Peter Borges is now a member of the Rays as he was acquired from the White Sox. Give us the details of that deal. And what kind of a role are you envision Borges playing on this team?
Well, it's going to be for cash or players to be named. And in talking to Borges, I got him on the phone today. He said, you know, obviously his understanding is he'll be a right-handed bat in the outfield and, you know, to come off the bench. And, of course, he's got some speed. He can back up at center field. This one really didn't surprise me. Maybe the timing of it surprised me, but I actually thought he might be a target in the offseason, and when I talked to him, he said it didn't surprise him because they had kind of talked together in the offseason, and there was interest. It didn't work out for one way or the other, but looks like a good fit, particularly with Colby Rasmus not starting the season, you know, on the 25-man active roster. So we'll wait and see what we get. I know he said he'll be in tonight about 10 o'clock, and he expects to be in camp tomorrow.
And I know that you've covered this in previous podcasts with regards to Rasmus. What is his status? What's his timetable? When could we see him back in the fold?
He made it sound like it's not, you know, too far away, but, you know, he's so close, there's no reason to, you know, aggravate, you know, his injury, you know, his recovery by pushing it for a made-up deadline. So he's comfortable with starting on the DL and coming out when he's ready.
Yeah, and better to err on the side of caution, as the saying goes. So Rasmus on the DL to begin the year, but Peter Borges, a veteran, like you said, he's got some speed. He can come off the bench and produce, and that is a good insurance policy for Kevin Cash and the Rays at the onset of the 2017 season. Speaking of Kevin Cash, Bill, he announced earlier on Tuesday that both Ricky Weeks Jr. and Tommy Hunter are going to be on the opening day 25-man roster. So similar to Borges, talk about the roles that each of them could play for this Rays team.
Well, I think it was more of a foregone conclusion that Weeks was going to be on the team ever since he got there. So that really wasn't as much of a surprise. And I wouldn't call Hunter a surprise either. It just seemed like they had a lot of dangling possibilities for the bullpen. And I think his veteranship and the fact that he's pitched against Major League East or AL East teams and done well, boded well for him. So, again, maybe I wouldn't call it a surprise, but, you know, it was news, I would say that.
Yeah, and Bill, when you look at the makeup of the 25-man roster, as we again are just days away from opening day, what are some spots yet to be filled, both with position players and within the rotation and the bullpen? Are things pretty much set in stone, or what's the biggest uncertainty right now for the Rays?
I think the composition of the bullpen is going to be the biggest uncertainty, and other than that, you have a pretty good idea of what the roster is going to be, except for maybe the backup catcher as well. So those two spots to me. You know, two or three spots in the bullpen and who's going to be the backup catcher.
And, of course, you bring up the catching situation, which is interesting because, you know, they've had three guys in-house for a while now in Kirk Casale, Luke Maley, and Jesus Sucre, and they bring in Derek Norris, the veteran who had a down year last year, didn't bat 200, but he is a veteran. He can lead. The talent is certainly still there. So four guys in the mix right now. How is this jigsaw puzzle going to play out, Bill?
Well, I think you've got to give one of those spots to Norris because they went out and got him. And, in fact, he looked good today. He threw out a runner at second. But then it comes down to, you know, whereas those other three guys thought it was three for two jobs, now it looks like it's three for one job. And, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see who it's going to be.
And, Bill, is the fact that the team went out and signed Derek Norris an indicator that neither of the other three guys really distinguished themselves? Is that kind of the impetus on what made the Rays sign Derek Norris?
You know, I don't know if it's as much that as it is. They just felt like they saw the availability of a good player and they took advantage of it. You know, their mantra has always been, always try to keep improving. So not necessarily that those guys did not perform, because all three of them actually performed pretty well this spring. But the more I think that just getting a quality player who's been a quality player like Norris.
Yeah, certainly, and a guy that's primed maybe for a bounce back because, like we said, he does have the track record, bit of a down year batting average-wise in 2016, but maybe he gets it back up to his normal career standards in 2017. So, Bill, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. Assuming that Norris is going to have one of those two catching spots amongst Casale, Maley, and Sucre, who has the inside track on that other catching position?
You're not putting me on the spot because I don't have a guess. Really, it's been very close between all three, and all three of them have different things they bring to the table, and I have absolutely no idea, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting what Kevin Cash decides which way to go, but like you said, I think it's a safe assumption that it's going to be Derek Norris and somebody amongst Kirk Casale, Luke Maley, and Jesus Sucre. We'll see what the roster looks like days away for opening day. Bill, to kind of come down the home stretch here, just want to get your thoughts on some individual spring training topics as camp is almost complete and the games are almost counting for real now. We're still a few days away from that, but the countdown is on. Bill, when you look at the minor leaguers who have come through Rays camp this year, of course, you've got your top guys that everybody knows about. You've got your guys that maybe aren't quite on the radar when spring training begins, but they maybe turn some heads and get noticed. So of that group, who has really stood out to you?
Well, to me, the favorite guy I enjoyed watching was Jake Bowers, and I really like to watch this guy hit. He's got just a smooth left-handed power swing, and not only has he got a smooth power swing, but he's got a good eye. I mean, if he wasn't hitting home runs, it seemed like he was walking this spring. So I think his stack is going to go way up. He's just 21, but I wouldn't be surprised if he moved fast.
Yeah, future certainly seems bright for him. And, Bill, moving on from that, I know that every spring there seems to be a player, maybe more than one, that isn't quite performing up to standards in spring training, and fans, you know, maybe irrationally sometimes maybe freak out a little bit about it because they're not playing well and they're worried it's going to carry over into the 2017 season. Most of the time it does not, because you take spring training with a grain of salt. But who is one guy right now, based on your feedback, that fans are a little worried about right now?
I would say probably Blake Snell. You know, it's like, you know, you keep working and working, and you're like wondering, is a switch going to flip here pretty soon, where he's starting to pitch better. And he did pitch a little better his last time out, but you'd like to see him a little sharper heading into, you know, the start of the season.
Yeah, I know that he certainly has a lot of talent. He certainly has the pedigree of a guy that could break out. We'll see if he puts it together after what has been a kind of a so-so spring. And, Bill, to come down the home stretch here, every team has a turnover between one season to the next. So of the new faces that you've come across in Rays spring training, who is maybe one guy that you've enjoyed interacting with the most?
I've enjoyed Malik Smith. You know, he came over, he spent, you know, seconds with the Mariners before coming over in a trade. You know, mostly he was with the Braves, but he's got a really nice attitude, and I've enjoyed watching him play. He's a real professional. Particularly enjoyed watching him, you know, work on bunting, and you know, which seems to be kind of a lost art. But I, you know, in the past, I've often wondered why guys who could run well have not worked more on their bunting. And this guy seems to get it. You know, I'm fast, and if I bunt, I'm going to get some extra hits, and I like that.
Yeah,
but again, he's got a refreshing personality, too.
Yeah, and that's great. He checks all the boxes. And like you said, I think guys are so enamored and so in love with hitting home runs and crushing the ball that the guys that do have this God-given speed, they really don't take advantage of it. But it sounds like Malik Smith has got his head screwed on straight, and he knows that, hey, if I'm going to be a productive player, it's going to be playing small ball. So it's good to see that he's working on that part of his game. And, Bill, to wrap up here.
I was going to say, ask him, I said, though, would he rather have a successful bunt single or a home run? And he said, got to go with the home run, just dig the long ball.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I got to give him credit for being honest there, but hopefully a little mixture of both. Maybe he pops 10 or 15 homers and has his share of bunt singles too. He could be a real asset for the Rays here in 2017. And, Bill, to wrap up, as this is, hard to believe, the final podcast before opening day, when you look back at the home openers you've covered at the Trop, give me one memory that kind of stands out to you.
I'd have to say probably 2009, when you saw him carrying out the banners, and, you know, the excitement of seeing them carry out the banner of their first, you know, American League East title, and their American League, you know, winning the American League pennant, and, you know, those going up on opening day at Tropicana Field.
Yeah, that's always a special moment to see the banners and the flags raised. As the saying goes, flags fly forever, and the Rays hopefully pursuing their next one in the not-too-distant future. Bill Chastain, great stuff as always. And, Bill, of course, as you and all the other beat reporters have done recently, you had the chance to sit down with Kevin Cash. So right now we're going to air your interview with the Rays skipper as you two discuss what's on hand for the Rays in the 2017 season.
Hey, Kevin, going into the spring, what was probably some of your biggest obstacles or challenges looking at what you had coming into camp?
I think just getting guys healthy. We've done that with about half of them. We're still trying to get some other guys healthy. We're optimistic that they're going to be here soon with us, but getting guys healthy, getting them on the field, and so far we've had good health in spring.
You've said all along you want to get back to pitching and defense this year. You think you're on the road to that?
I do. I think, you know, we came in with some question marks in the bullpen, and we've got some good candidates that are going to fill some spots for us. Defensively, Tim Beckham's done a tremendous job at short, and Brad Miller has probably been the highlight just transitioning into second base.
What are you most optimistic about this year's team?
Just winning more games. We got to win more games. I'm optimistic that we're capable of doing it and getting to where we need to be at the end of the year.
Leaving camp, you think this team will be a contender?
I do.
It is Wednesday, March 29th, just days away from the Red Sox home opener at Fenway Park. They take on the Pirates that day in interleague play, and we're joined as always by Ian Brown, our Red Sox reporter. It's Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting for Tim McMaster this week, and Ian, we appreciate the time. And some uncertainty, Ian, with that 25th spot on the roster right now, because we have some health issues going around, which are kind of complicating things. Josh Rutledge headed to the 10-day DL, and Mitch Moreland has been shut down with the flu. And also, you know, Hanley Ramirez's shoulder is not quite up to par in terms of playing the field. He's hitting okay, but the field is a different story. So how does this whole thing shake out, given all the aches and pains and the flu bugs going around with regards to that 25th spot on the roster?
Yeah, man, it's become a little confusing just because, look, the whole spring, you know, we were kind of under the impression that Josh Rutledge was battling with Marco Hernandez for that 25th spot, that last bench player spot. And then what happens is, you know, Rutledge, who was just learning how to play first base, by the way, he strained his hamstring in the game in Bradenton on Tuesday. So now, like, in a vacuum, you would just say, okay, Hernandez will replace Rutledge. Hernandez has hit about 450, I think, this spring. He was at a great camp, and they would just slot them in. But now, because not only is Hanley can't play first base right now, but Mitch Moreland has this flu thing where he's being quarantined for 3 days. So you can't be certain, at least, that he's going to be able to play opening day. So that leaves Brock Holt as the only guy on the roster who even knows how to play first base. So now the thinking is that they might have to take somebody besides Hernandez, because Hernandez can't play first, say, Steve Selke, who had a really good camp and was just sent down a couple days ago. So that's kind of where, you know, or another right-handed hitter like a Devin Marrero to complement the team better. So that's kind of where they are right now. And they'll probably, I would think they'll make this decision, you know, the next couple days.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting one. And the Moreland flu thing, I mean, everybody gets the flu, but to be quarantined for 3 days, is this more serious than initially thought with him?
Yeah, no, it's just this is influenza. This isn't like, you know, flu-like symptoms. This is the flu. And the team trainer has it also, Brad Pearson, and he's been quarantined from the team also. And quite frankly, the Red Sox are worried that this is going to spread to other guys on the team. And, you know, Mookie Betts wasn't supposed to play anyway today, but he wasn't feeling so well today. So, yeah, you just hope that opening day is Monday, that this doesn't just start spreading like wildfire. You know how much time these guys spend around each other.
Yeah, one guy gets it. Next thing you know, half the clubhouse is hit. So hopefully that fate will not befall the Red Sox before Monday, but we'll see. It'll be a very interesting weekend, to say the least. Ian, transitioning from that to the bullpen situation, of course, as we know by now, Tyler Thornburg, he was expected to be the eighth inning bridge to Craig Kimbrell. He's now hurt, as he still has not pitched since March 1st. The Red Sox gave up a pretty penny to get him in the offseason from the Milwaukee Brewers. And is there a fear that this is Carson Smith the sequel, or is this a little more benign and he should be okay? What's the thinking here?
Yeah, it's not Carson Smith, because, look, Carson Smith was an elbow, a forearm injury. As we know, those often lead to Tommy John surgery. So this is a shoulder. And, you know, Joe Kelly had a shoulder impingement early last season. He bounced back fine. He was throwing 98 miles an hour down the stretch. So they think that Thornburg is a similar thing. And it sounds like, you know, he was just trying to do a little bit too much, too fast. He got the dead arm kind of early in spring training. It might have had something to do with the shoulder program. The team has guys on. It takes some guys, new guys, to come to Boston some time to get used to that. Whatever the reason was. And then he was pushing it because he's the new guy on the team, and he wanted to make sure he was there for the team. And he admitted today when I talked to him that, you know, maybe he pushed this a little too fast. But now that the decision has been made to put him on the DL, he can now take his time. Don't throw for 10 days at all. and then just see how he feels after that. So I think that he thinks that he can nip this in the bud right now.
And that's certainly
that's
the hope.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly the hope as he was being relied upon to be that eighth inning bridge to Craig Kimbrell. So, Ian, until Tyler does get back, I mean, what are we looking at here in terms of an eighth inning guy? Is it mix and match? Is it Barnes spot? Is it Joe Kelly's? What do you think?
As far as the eighth inning, I think they're going to start with Joe Kelly as the main guy in the eighth inning. And if Joe can get the job done, he can keep that job. If not, you know, they'll mix in Heath Henry. They'll mix in Matt Barnes. You know, the Red Sox are bringing camp with three lefties here in the bullpen. And as it was announced today that Robbie Scott will be that third lefty joining Robbie Ross Jr., Fernando Abad. So maybe mix and match a little bit with lefties. The team has a bunch of lefties.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, coming up with the Red Sox, they mix all lefties. So they're going to see how this plays out. But certainly Joe Kelly right now, they'd like to see him, grab hold of that.
Yeah, I mean, Joe has he's always had the stuff. That blazing fastball hasn't always quite put it together, but did show some promise in a bullpen role last season. Maybe that translates to a full successful 2017. And what about, any possibility at all? And I think the answer is no to this, but could this maybe open the door for a guy like Kyle Kendrick, who has pretty much been the Red Sox best pitcher all spring? He was just sent down to Triple A Pawtucket, but with Thornburg on the shelf for an indefinite amount of time here, is there at least a chance maybe they stick Kendrick in the bullpen there, or maybe not quite yet?
No, I mean, like I said, they selected Robbie Scott today, so the bullpen is filled up now. The only way Kendrick would make this, the rotation is if they decided that, Drew Pomeranz wasn't quite ready. But the way it looks right now, Drew's going to pitch Monday down here in Florida, the same day the Red Sox are opening their season. He'll pitch on the backfield down here. That's his final ramp up. And then the plan is for Drew to pitch Sunday against the Tigers at the sixth game of the season. So Kendrick will pitch the last Grapefruit League game here in Fort Myers on Thursday against the Nationals. And then he'll start the season. Probably be Pawtucket's opening day starter, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so, too. And it's a great insurance policy for any team to have a guy that has big league experience, a guy that had a successful spring, to stash him down in AAA, because at some point he is going to be needed. He is going to start games in a Red Sox uniform. It's only a matter of when. So we'll see when that time comes for Kyle Kendrick, as he has had, just like we said, a fantastic spring training. Ian, want to get your thoughts on Blake Swihart. He was also sent back to AAA, and you have to feel for the guy, because I think on any other major league roster, he has to be part of that, of any team's catching tandem, squeezed out on the Red Sox by Sandy Leon and Christian Vasquez. I know the Red Sox said that Blake is not a finished product just yet. Elaborate on what they mean by that.
Yeah, just a few more things with the catching technique. And look, this guy missed a full year of catching pretty much last year, because look, he started as the team's opening day catcher, and then they pulled the plug on it so they could finagle the roster and get Christian Vasquez back. And then Swihart then switched positions, played left field for the year. Then he ran into a wall, banged up his ankle playing left field. So he lost that whole year of catching. This is a guy who kind of became a catcher sort of late in his baseball development. I think when he went to college, he wasn't one of those guys who grew up catching his whole life. So he's still relatively new to the position. So just some little nuances. But look, they think that he's made a lot of progress as a catcher. And they actually like what they saw this spring, but you have the three catchers, so why not let him get a little more seasoning, some more reps with his work behind the plate, just to brush him up. But we're going to see him in Boston at some point this year, and maybe even in a prominent role behind that plate for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I would seem to think so. And it's, you can't tell Sandy Leon that he's not on the team after what he did last year. Christian Vasquez's defense has always been great. The hitting has been better. That's always been his bugaboo. So unfortunately, Blake Swihart is the guy that's the odd man out right now. But I think, we all agree he is going to be in Boston, hopefully sooner rather than later. Ian, to wrap up here, a couple of random spring training topics I want to throw your way, as this is the final spring training podcast before opening day 2017. Every team, no matter what year, what camp, what team it is, there's always a deep bond or friendship that develops between two players, and it's what I like to call, and other people like to call, a bromance. So what bromance have you seen blossom in Red Sox camp over the past month or so?
Yeah, I would have to say the Brock Holt, Andrew Benintendi bromance. These guys are calling themselves the Flow Bros with their long hair, and they're tweeting love notes to each other and stuff. So it's been pretty amusing to watch. So I would have to say Brock Holt taking the young taking the rookie Andrew Benintendi under his wing, and those guys seem like they've hit it off quite nicely.
Interesting bromance there. Who's got the better flow in your eyes, Brock or Andrew?
Yeah, I think Brock Holt's got the better natural flow, but you know, Benintendi is working on it.
A competition that we look forward to seeing develop all season, no question. Ian, give me a guy, a minor leaguer, whether it's one of the top prospects that Red Sox fans know by heart, or maybe a lower-level guy that's kind of come on the radar rather unexpectedly, somebody that's surprising people and turned some heads this spring.
Yeah, I would say Marco Hernandez. Look, he did a decent job as a utility guy last year when he had some stints in Boston, but they really love the way the shape he came into this spring and the way he's really making things happen every time he's played, with his speed, with hitting the ball in the gaps, with his ability to play different positions. And John Farrelly made the comment that he thinks that he could start for a lot of other teams. And this is the guy that they got traded for Felix Dubron a few years ago with the Cubs. And so I'd say Marco Hernandez has really raised his stature. And the only problem is he's kept Brock Holt, who's one of the best utility people in baseball, and is also a left-handed hitter kind of in front of him and blocking his points to the big leagues at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marco, as you said, hitting, I think, well over 400 this spring. So hopefully a place is found for him on the Red Sox roster at some point this season. We'll see what happens there. And, Ian, I think that the answer to this next question initially would have been Pablo Sandoval, but now I don't think quite as much. The question being, judging from fan response, on Twitter and other forms of social media and questions that you get in your inbox, a player that, fans were concerned about, that, maybe he's not having a great spring, not hitting well, not pitching well, whatever the case may be, and they're worried that's going to translate and carry over into the 2017 season. Based on feedback from Red Sox Nation right now, who is that one guy that fans are maybe a little irrationally concerned about?
Yeah, without a doubt, it's Drew Pomeranz. Because, look, Drew had, they made that trade with the Padres last year and made the All-Star team and didn't pitch up to quite what Red Sox fans were expecting. And then there was that toll report that came out about the Padres not being completely forthcoming with the medical updates and even the report that the Red Sox had a chance to rescind that trade, and they didn't. So fans, haven't been very patient with Drew this spring. They're realizing that Red Sox brought him along slowly by design this spring. And John Farrelly even said to Dave Dombrowski early in camp, let's not judge Drew Pomeranz by how he pitches the first three or four times in spring training games, because he's just regaining his feel after sort of spending most of the spring kind of gaining some arm strength back in that left elbow. So I think that Drew is actually in a position to have a pretty good year here, and that fans should think about just giving him a chance. This guy played hurt last year. Nobody gave him any credit for that. So maybe just be a little more patient with Drew Palmer and see what kind of success he has before you just automatically assume that was a bad trade.
Yeah, he's going to be a big X factor for the Red Sox this season. I think everybody is in agreement about that. And he pitched earlier today, as we're talking here on a Wednesday. The numbers, again, like you alluded to, don't jump off the page. I think 4 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, nothing great. But as you said, you really have to put the numbers on the back burner as he is still rounding into form. And hopefully by the time he's in full swing for the regular season, he is the pitcher that the Red Sox thought they were getting last year in that trade with the Padres. And Ian, to begin to wrap up here, a lot of new faces on the 2017 Red Sox. Among those, the newcomer that you have enjoyed interacting.
Yeah, probably Mitch Moreland. Just a very friendly, nice guy, very straightforward. Kind of no BS, very polite, just have southern twang there. Mitch has been a joy to deal with so far, but they've all been fine.
Yeah, it sure sounds like a fun bunch, and hopefully Mitch has got antibiotics and chicken soup in his system as we speak, because we need him back on that field ASAP. Ian Brown, great stuff as always. We thank you for the time, and we're going to end this a bit differently than in previous weeks, as you, Ian, had the chance to sit down with Red Sox manager John Farrell to discuss the upcoming season for the 2017 Red Sox. Let's air that interview right now.
John, second spring in a row, lefty star ace here. This year it's Chris Sale. After being around Chris for the last 6 weeks or so, what excites you most about getting to see him pitch every fifth day this year?
In addition to the obvious things, you see the stuff and which comes out of his arm, the three pitch mix. I think what excites us is the competitive nature that he is, how diligent his work is in between starts, but you know, you watch a guy interact with others in the clubhouse, and he's, you know, he's a down-to-earth, genuine guy. But it's almost like that switch gets flipped once he walks across the foul line and takes his place on the mound. So that, to me, is one of the things that really stands out about this camp.
And just because of what David Price means to this team, you know, how concerned are you just about, you know, what you're going to be able to get from him? Not just so much in the short term, but just kind of like in the long term for the season.
You know, Ian, I think anytime you take one of your core players out of the mix, there's a void. They're going to be missed. The contributions, particularly when you look back to what David gave us last year, a high number of quality innings. And right now, we don't know, sitting here today, how many innings he'll be able to pitch for us this year. We fully expect him to come back to us. But I'd love to sit here and tell you the date in which that will be. So the way we have to approach this is that he'll be with us when he's first available, and with the ability to make a major impact to this team and certainly the rotation.
What talking about the lineup, you know, what can Red Sox fans expect? You know, lineup without David Ortiz kind of this year. It seems like it's still pretty good lineup.
Well, we're very excited about the group that's here. Yes, David's going to be missed. We know that, but when you look at the overall athleticism, you look at the overall depth to our lineup, and there's a scenario that has, like Pablo Sandoval hitting down in the 7-8 hole. A full year of Andrew Benintendi, I think, is going to be an exciting one in and of itself. And the constant growth of the younger players, and that's Bogarts, it's Betts, Benintendi, as we talked about, Jackie Bradley. So I think the athleticism, and I think one thing that our fans have really grasped onto or identified with over the past couple of years is that this is a team that can score runs in many different ways. You know, the athleticism allows us to run the bases more aggressively than maybe teams compared to a number of years ago. So the overall depth and the young athletic approach that our guys have.
And, you know, you mentioned Pablo. Everybody was excited when he got to camp, just how much better he looked. But more than that, just seeing the way he's played this spring, how much does that excite you for him being a top, I guess, comeback player of the year type of candidate?
Well, he's had a resurgence in his own way, and it's been great to see because, you know, we talk about a reconditioned body, but I think the energy in which he's displayed, whether it's been on defense, whether it's been on running the bases, and certainly the way he's swung the bat, the bat speed has returned. His at-bats against left-handed pitching have been more consistent than what we've had to compare against the last couple of years. So he's playing with a chip on his shoulder, and I think more than anything, given the 2 years he's come through, it says there's a sense of pride in there that is shining through and it's showing its way through. So we're looking forward to him maintaining that as we go deeper into the season.
And you have one of the most exciting players in the game in Mookie Betts. Obviously, a breakout year last year. You know, how do you look at Mookie kind of going into this year?
Well, he's gonna be one of those players, and is one of those players that people will come and see him specifically. And he's always doing it with a smile on his face. He's still the genuine, inquisitive personality, despite the success that he's had at the big league level. But when you consider the power, speed, the defense, he's an entire package as far as an elite player in the major leagues. And along with Dustin Pedroia, who's really the holdover leader in our team, on our team from so many players that have come through with so many successful players. But in addition to Mookie Betts, that's a pretty dynamic pair that we look to as everyday position players to lead our club.
Thanks, John.
Okay, Ian.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.